So welcome to the Ithaca Tech podcast for Saturday, July 16th, 2011. From Incandescent Software, I'm Aaron Hammond.
And I'm Michal Kuklis. Welcome aboard.
And today we have a special interview with Casey Dreyer. He's a Rails developer in the Ithaca area. We also got some new audio equipment, so hopefully the audio quality is a little bit better despite some commotion in the background as we were recording in Phillips Hall. So enjoy the podcast. So we're talking to Casey Dreyer today. So Casey, maybe you want to start off with a little introduction?
Sure. Yeah, I've been a Ruby developer for 2.5 years now. Before that, I was doing PHP. Started doing web development about 6 years ago now, ever since I came to Ithaca. I don't really have any notable like open source projects to my name, so I can't list those off.
Well, you worked on some cool stuff, right, over the years.
I've been trying to make a cool open source project. That's my eventual goal. I just need more ideas. But I've been trying to just open source whatever I can in the hopes that someone will find it useful at some point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a good rule of thumb.
What was amazing to me was to see that you were able to contribute back to Ruby on Rails, and I think it was twice, right? One was for 2.3.8
and 2.3.12 and 3.08.
That was pretty awesome.
That was a happy day for me. And but part of the thing was with those two was that they weren't. I'm really happy with it, right? But I can't claim like some super deep knowledge of the code base to say, oh, it should have this feature. Both of those were things that I ran into problems where Rails wasn't working. And so why isn't it working? And then, you know, fast forward 8 to 10 hours later and I'm submitting the patch. So, I mean, it's almost just like, you know, okay, I hesitate to take too much credit for doing that. I was really happy with it, but again, it's just like, okay, something's not working. Why isn't this working? Okay, right. Here's how to make it work. Now I might as well submit this.
But it was still awesome because I think most of those contributions are the way you described it. Like, right, people run into some problems and they try to like fix it and then push it back. So how was the process of submitting the ticket?
It's really intimidating, I think, especially for the first time because, you know, you're submitting to someone who's going to be reviewing it is like Jose Valim or some, you know, these people who you really respect. And who write much better code than you do. And so, okay, you know, and then also, you know, there's people who it's like they submit all the time. There's a process to it. And the process isn't always well documented. You kind of have to spend some time going around saying, okay, what's the proper way to submit an issue? And what's the proper way to say something's not working? You know, I don't want to embarrass myself by giving some shady bug report and someone goes and goes, oh, actually, this is working. You're just too dumb to figure out how to make it work right. So it came down to where the biggest part is convincing myself that there was actually a problem with Rails and not me. Mm-hmm. And that was done by unit testing, going and opening up the Rails test framework and figuring out how to make that work. Finding that was an actual bug, being able to write a test that would fail, and you know, then going through the whole process of, okay, now how do I actually make this work? That's almost the easy part, I guess. The hard part, again, is like, okay, now I know something's failing. I need to write an issue for it, and I need to submit a patch for it. It was hard for me when I did it for the last two we're talking about because I started to submit both of those right when Rails switched over to GitHub issues.
Oh, okay. I see.
And they used to use Lighthouse Tracker, and so that was a totally different. Right, the rug was literally taken under my feet, and they closed all the old issues, and I had to resubmit in GitHub. But I actually found GitHub was a much more pleasant process because you fork Rails, you submit a patch, and then you just submit the patch as an issue, and it was taken. So, but those two. So once I did that. And someone actually, someone's looking at this and they say, oh, okay. And then they accepted it. It was like, oh, happy day. It's really exciting. And then submitting the next patch was significantly easier because the intimidation factor is far less. And all you have to do is just make sure, okay, am I conforming to good Rails coding standards? And am I pretty confident that my tests are correct and failing? Mm-hmm. And once you do that, you know, you look through the issues and far more obnoxious people are posting far more many incorrect issues and getting closed all the time, that the bar is actually quite low.
Mm-hmm. So they probably really appreciate it when you have a full test.
Yeah,
and actually,
I mean,
prove that it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I was so nervous the first couple times that I was like, "There's no way I'm not doing this with at least one test to prove it." And the fact that I had a test actually just automatically, I think, puts you in the top 25%.
That's why
testing is so great. You know, to have that testing, just to know how to test to begin with, you know, you're coming in ahead.
Mm-hmm. So you've been, so following up on that, are you, I think Aaron Patterson has like some site for Ruby contributors or something like that. Are you going to show up now?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'll be maybe at the bottom of, 1700 people who've committed to Rails now, but I won't let that deter me from being a positive note.
cool.
I mean, the coolest thing, and this is what, I mean, this is why I love working on an open source software in my everyday work, because I couldn't do this if this was IIS or .NET, you know. Like, something didn't work, I would be screwed. And even if I wanted to fix it, there's no way for me to do that.
Right.
And that was when I finally got a patch in. I finally kind of realized how powerful the concept of open source software is, because not only did, you know, was I able to solve my problem, but now I feel or felt like part of the community. Like, I was able, you know, that I was empowered to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really great
cool
feature.
Feeling.
Yeah.
That's really cool to hear. Yeah.
So you've been doing Rails at Singlebrook, right?
Yeah.
And how long have you?
I started at Singlebrook last March.
Okay.
I came from Cornell, where I was working at the hotel school. And Singlebrook has just been a fantastic, I think my Rails and Ruby programming abilities have just taken off since I started at Singlebrook.
And you're pretty much carrying like the Rails flag there, right?
I'm the obnoxious. I'm the really obnoxious guy who's always talking about Rails, and we should do this in Rails, and we should move these into Rails, and you know, and really kind of proselytizing it, because it's actually been really informative, right? Because when you're a person who really likes Rails, when you go into the framework and it just clicks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, this is amazing. You know, this is beautiful and I love it. And then someone, you know, you're just like showing it to people, like, look what we found. And they're like, what? And being able to, like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is the most amazing thing. And why aren't you, you know, jumping around like I am about it? And they're like, yeah, that's what I actually find it annoying or something, you know? And being able to, you know, that was actually really important to me. It's like, okay, why is it better? Why, if it's fantastic, and also actually realizing why isn't not always the right thing to do. And that's been an important thing for me too. And so I hope I'm the guy at Singlebrook. Maybe you can talk to my coworkers there. But I'm the guy at Singlebrook who really pushes for Rails, but isn't super obnoxious about it anymore.
Obnoxious in the healthy way.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of the mosquito that's always buzzing about it. But realizing that, you know, I think it's important, like, just because I like something doesn't mean someone else has to like it. And I think Ruby and Rails has a great way of mapping to my mental process when solving a problem. And everyone else's mental processes are going to be different, and that's totally legitimate. You know, it's okay to just like something, and it's okay to dislike something without having to justify it. And what's been great, though, is that Singlebrook overall has been really positive and really supportive and really eager to embrace Rails. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And now we do almost all of our new developments in Rails, and we'll jump into Drupal for our CMS stuff.
Cool. So you basically, I know you guys do a mix. So Rails, Drupal, is there any?
Yeah, and then we have a bunch of legacy. Singlebrook was until about a little bit before when I came in, a mainly Cold Fusion shop, which is kind of the opposite of everything I've been talking about in the last 5 minutes here. But yeah, so we do. There's a lot of legacy Cold Fusion stuff that we still support, and some new stuff when it's requested.
I was going to mention that it's probably good for the organization to use some sort of framework across the board, which follows some sort of convention, right? And Ruby and Rails is probably a great thing to use.
Yeah, it is. It helps that, but it's also, I think, that only goes so far, because mm-hmm. people are really good at finding ways to circumvent convention, mm-hmm. or even generally stay in convention, but still have a unique way of implementing solutions. So it's something that I wish that's a really hard thing to do, is like, how do you get a more uniform coding style? And we haven't solved that problem yet.
Even within Rails or a particular framework,
you can run into problems.
So one thing about Singlebrook I found interesting is that it's an incorporation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you can maybe talk about?
Yeah, I'll see. It's a certification, and actually it just became a legal certification or a way to structure your company in the state of New York, and it's growing in other states. A B Corporation, its tagline, they call it the triple bottom line, which is people, planet, and profits.
Okay.
And I really like that, actually, because profits are still in there because you're a business, and that's no shame to want profits.
That makes sense.
But it's also, it's on the same level as you know, people, and then also the community, essentially, where you are. And so a B Corporation, you can apply to this certification board, and they will rate you on all these, you know, how you interact with the community, your kind of, you know, energy use, how you interact with your employees and so forth. And then you get a certain rating. If you're above a certain rating, you become a certified B Corporation. Mm-hmm. And they really encourage this open process, and you can update it every year, and people can see, you know, what strengths do you have as this, and how do you help your community and so forth. And what I found really powerful about that is that it really, as an employee, it makes you really value the company you're working for. And when you value the company, you'll always do better work. But it's a really neat process. And so we're one of the, I think, only 400 companies. It's a really new thing. It's in the whole country, our B Corporation.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bigger number.
There's one other in Ithaca, which is a skateboarding shop.
I see. Cool.
Interesting.
So you've been also doing, you know, setting up those meetups and hacker fests around Ithaca. I think we can blame you for that, right?
So, yeah, that's something I've also been had wanted to do for a long time. And Singlebrook is great at supporting that and giving the space for it. But something that always struck me, and especially noticed this when I was working at Cornell has, I don't know, maybe 100, I would almost guess, web developers in some sense or another, or people associated with web development. You wouldn't know it working at Cornell unless you're maybe working at CI, the main IT department, but there's no way for all this information to kind of mix together, and that was my main motivation in creating a web group. And originally, I'd almost wanted it as a Ruby group because, you know, it's obviously what excites me, but I was hoping when I first started it with my colleague Jared at Singlebrook to make it as inclusive as possible, just to get web developers to come and talk to each other and see that there are other web developers in Ithaca area. Just because, again, I've always been surprised how many people I don't know who do this, you know. And some of them work upstairs. I had no idea.
Oh, really?
Until they
the
came.
Same
building?
The same building.
Yeah, the same building, yeah. And they do Python, you know, and Django and maybe Pylons. They might punch me in the face if I say that wrong. It's been a really neat thing, and the Hackfest was to encourage open source participation, but also just to encourage myself. I can block off a few hours every week to not worry about client work, and to just say, I'm not going to do any work for my job. I'm going to do work that I find interesting, and just having that structure is really helpful for me to be able to create code to contribute back or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was great. I think we met a lot of people thanks to you know, coming to those meetings.
Yeah, we were really excited to see you start those up, and we've been attending, and, you know, part of our motivation behind this podcast is sort of in a similar vein to sort of show people in the area that there are other devs and that there is this community of developers and sort of build that community.
Yeah, I think it's crucial to have a community, and because web development can be so isolating.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Especially if you work at home. Mm-hmm. Or if you're the web guy in a department or wherever, you know, you don't know anyone else. No one else is going to be really shouting out from the hills. And so I'd love it if more people in the area, I think it's actually just hard to reach people. You know, how do you advertise something like that to people who aren't aware of it? That's been another challenge I've been trying to work on.
And it's interesting that, you know, Ithaca has so many things going on, and this seems like a notable sort of omission that, you know,
yeah.
people get together for every other reason
right.
in Ithaca.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. And it's the technical part, I mean, again, you forget. I mean, they always joke about, like, the person serving you coffee in Ithaca probably has two PhDs or something, right?
Yeah, that's fun.
there's a lot of technical ability here for such a small town, but you wouldn't know it because there's no organization behind it.
So I also noticed, you know, we follow you on Twitter, and I noticed you've been tweeting about, like, NASA funding. Is that something you want to mention, or can you get a plug in for?
Yeah, sure. I've been a NASA fan since I was probably six, which is how I ended up in computer science or doing computer work through physics. Though I do, at this point, I have to admit that my wife does get funding from NASA at this point. So I assume I would be this passionate about it regardless, because that's one of the reasons why I married my wife, is that she does stuff for NASA. Very quickly, the proposed budget for 2012 cuts NASA's overall budget by about 10%, and also cuts the James Webb Space Telescope, which is the successor to the Hubble. There are no other planned space telescopes once the Hubble dies, and so cutting the James Webb basically destroys our space-based telescope.
So we're not going to have, as a nation, we're not going to have a...
Yeah,
that's
for decades. Yeah. Basically, and it's honestly a kind of a hard project to defend because it's over budget and behind schedule, but they're pushing the limits. That'll happen. It's never been given the amount of money it needs. So that was so disappointing to me that was the first time I think I called it my civic temper tantrum, where I wrote letters and trying to get people up at the Cornell Space Sciences Department to write letters and contact your congressman about it. So hopefully it'll come back, but it's mini.
Is there a petition site? Is there some sort of site you can go to?
There's not a petition site, but you know what? Petition sites don't actually make any difference.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that actually makes difference is people sending hard letters or making phone calls.
Okay.
I remember talking to a friend of mine who worked at a congressional office. If you're not in their district, they just burn your letters anyway.
They don't even look at them.
Yeah, why would they, right? Because
yeah.
You're not voting for, you won't be able to vote for them. You know, but our own congressman, Hinchy, or in the Ithaca area, and senators make a big difference. And they see physical letters and they get phone calls. That's actually how they measure support and by how much work you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my pitch for supporting, well, I don't know why to support NASA, but that's why I got all upset about it.
Cool.
So we heard actually you're going to be moving on. Now.
Yeah,
so
I'm moving to Seattle in
off.
About 2 weeks.
Kind of exciting. Can you
it
talk
is.
A little bit?
Well, yeah, so my wife's a graduate student, so we don't have to remain in any particular place. And Singlebrook, being a wonderful corporation that it is, will let me work remotely.
Cool, so you'll still be
working? I'll be
working
for Singlebrook,
awesome.
Yeah. I'll be the nomadic employee. but we'll be moving to Seattle, and actually I just realized the place that I'll be moving is about two blocks away from where the Seattle.rb group meets every week.
Oh, nice. Wow. That's
which
awesome.
Is what I'm actually very excited about, to see some real Ruby pros.
There are probably a lot of people there, right?
Yeah,
Ruby,
yeah,
Ruby,
like
Ruby,
the, like the guys who make Ruby gems are part of the group, and so is Aaron Patterson and all these other people.
That's awesome.
Quite exciting. So I'll be the quiet guy sitting in the corner, you know, looking around nervously.
Sounds like a perfect place for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'll be fun. So that's a big first step, but it'll be a nice change. Though, again, something that it will be hard to leave Ithaca because of all the stuff we've talked about. And again, that's why I'm excited you guys are doing this podcast, is to help create a strong developer community in this town, and something that I always wanted to do. Maybe I'll put this charge in you guys now that I'm leaving.
You can do it remotely.
Something, yeah. I'll face it. Well, here, this is my idea, and this is something that I think would be a wonderful thing, which would be an Ithaca Developers Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And having a local conference in town, you know, doing something relatively cheap so people don't have to pay to travel, maybe a $25 mm-hmm. registration, you get a place up at Cornell, and you have a day or 2 day conference, and really showcase, you know, pull out the big guns. You know, what have you been working on? What's some great development? You know, and that'll really, and it's publicized, and it's a great way to get people involved.
Yeah, I agree. And
it's a
actually,
very good idea.
We've been talking to people here and there, bouncing around ideas. One is having sort of a conference or a mini conference.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is, I guess I'll get a plug in for now, is Startup Weekend. There are some folks that are interested in doing a Startup Weekend.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not familiar with it, it's a program where, you know, entrepreneurs get together you know, programmers get mentored by, you know, sort of business people and get together to, you know, launch new products.
So the idea is to maybe connect different people from different backgrounds together to create something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something we'll keep in mind, and maybe we can get something.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work, but again, it's something it's always wanted to do in 6 months, and then it just ran out of time.
Like all these things are things that, you know, I would want to attend. You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like if there's
right.
an Ithaca podcast, I would want to listen to it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yep.
So we're just doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No, I have great hopes. I mean, and again, I think once you get a Dr. Nick Williams from EngineYard. I don't know if you've watched some of his talks lately. He's been really pushing, beyond pushing JRuby and Rubinius, he's been pushing the concept of local development meetings,
mm-hmm.
and him in particular, Ruby meetings, because, you know, he had this wonderful line that I really love, which was, "We love Ruby, we want it to win," which is, for me, hits right to the core of it, right? It's like, why I would be so sad if Ruby died in 10 years and I had to develop on JavaScript all the time. Sorry, Michael. But it's something that was really powerful, and he talked a lot about how to foster and create a good local community,
mm-hmm.
and putting the charge out to everybody. Everyone should be doing this. You know, even if you just have it and one other person shows up, that's a lot better than not doing it. And so that was really inspiring. And you know, no matter where I go, I plan to be a part of it or start one. And I really hope the one here can keep going in some form or another.
Do you know if somebody's going to be taking that over? Do you have somebody lined up? Maybe Jared?
Jared came to me with the idea originally, and I'm hoping, Singlebrook really likes it and they like supporting it. So I'm assuming it's going to be continue through Jared.
Cool.
And it's just getting people to show up every week.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all the questions we had.
Is there anything else you'd like to share or plug?
Well, plug. There's a lot of things. I mean, I was trying to think what would be interesting for someone to listen to, right?
Mm-hmm.
For what I had to say, and my guess is that they didn't want me to talk about NASA or where I come from, but I was just trying to wonder aloud and maybe something interesting would be, you know, how you use Ruby and why you use, what drew you guys to Ruby too. I mean, this could be always a really interesting discussion, because it kind of depends on the sort of, like, some people just don't find it great.
Attractive,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, and I, again, this is like a hard thing for me to understand. Why doesn't everyone just love it?
So you came from, you know, sort of a physics background, then into web development via PHP, and then you went to Ruby. So
yeah.
Is there anything?
Well, maybe, yeah. I did start
right?
with Fortran. That was my first.
Okay.
So maybe.
I was going to ask you about
yeah.
functional programming.
Yeah. I mean, Fortran 77 was my first language when I was doing physics. And I just found that impenetrable. That was a rough way to start. And PHP was better, but it was messy. And I
mm-hmm.
think what Ruby really taught me was to be elegant.
Mm-hmm.
in your coding, and that the programming could be elegant, and there's this aesthetic pleasure you can take by seeing, almost besides the point of the content, but seeing like the play between, you know, ground and form and ground and of the code, how it lays out on the page.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to think, you know, one of the best things about Ruby is the symbols class, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you can have a string-like thing that doesn't have quotes. You don't have these ugly, you know, quotes, ampersands, not ampersands, quotes and apostrophes kind of hanging up above your line of code, throwing
mm-hmm.
off your spacing, but you just have this a colon and then the word.
Mm-hmm.
And that little simple thing makes an incredible difference in how the code
looks
on the page. And I was wondering if you guys have these similar experiences working in Ruby, or if you feel that way, or if that's not even an issue, if you go into the structure.
I have to admit it that I felt the same way
mm-hmm.
after a while, not right away. The first time I opened Ruby and tried to work with it, it was actually very confusing.
Yeah.
I think it was mostly because of the metaprogramming. You know, I wasn't sure where things are coming from or in which order things execute, and so it took me a while to like understand the code, but after a while, I started liking it a lot. And
I like the expressiveness of Ruby and the fact that because it's so expressive, you can do things in less code and then you need less documentation to explain the boilerplate.
Mm-hmm.
I came from a heavy Java background, and in Java, you sort of have a minimum level of complexity that you can never get beneath. You can only simplify to a point.
Yeah.
And any further simplification just creates more complication.
Right.
So you always end up creating boilerplate and then documenting boilerplate and then having chains of these sorts of things. And with Ruby, you can get really minimal. You can really succinctly define something and use it elsewhere. And you don't need like reams of code, you know, and indirect layers of indirection. And that's powerful and sometimes can be dangerous if you get carried away with metaprogramming.
Yeah.
But it also is just awesome sometimes when you have, you know, something that would be complicated in another language, and it just dawns on you that you can throw a block in there, or you can just move it out and do something simple, and you know it just works.
Mm-hmm.
I love the all the methods attached to the array and hash in Ruby, because I mean, I think it makes your code so much simpler. There are all those, you know, things you can do, map and reduce, and there's, for example, include, where you can check if something is in the array.
Mm-hmm.
In Java, you had to write a lot of code.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing Java before also, so
I found that it drew me more towards functional programming with all those sort of helper methods on the collection of classes, and you know, sometimes I'd have lines that were just doing map and filter and inject. It was a really functional style, and that was aided by having, you know, these facilities in the core libraries.
Yeah, the only thing which I still always have to remind myself about Ruby is, you know, you have different ways to pass a block or execute this extra functionality attached to the method, and I guess there are three different ways, right? In Ruby, you can either pass the block or proc or lambda, and
mm-hmm.
they all differ a little bit, and I never remember what's the difference.
So that's
why I like, you know, that's why I sort of like JavaScript, because it's an only
the way to
yeah,
do it, yeah.
You pass the function and it's the same syntax all the time. It's syntax is not as pretty as Ruby syntax, but I don't know, maybe that's why.
Yeah, well, you're the one who'll have a job in 10 years once everything is in JavaScript.
You never know. We'll see.
Cool. Well, I got one last question.
Sure.
Favorite data structure?
Favorite data structure in Ruby?
In whatever.
Data structure. You mean like a hash or something like that?
Lists,
or arrays or
whatever.
Lists or... I like the Ruby case statement. That's not really
okay.
A data structure. Is that... Can that
control
count?
Structure.
Control structure? Okay.
Sure.
Because when you use it the right way, you can have this very clean way of going through a bunch of conditional statements and finding the right thing. But it just reads so beautifully, because you can just do case, you know, and then when this is true, then do this. And so, you know, I had a thing where I was writing a status, output some status, and so I had to check, you know, what all these bits are set, what's the status in a text. And he was like, you know, and then, of course, in Ruby, you can have these expressive methods with a question mark or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when, you know, active, then active. You know, when, you know, so this isn't true, then, you know, pending or something like that. And just reading this out as a little block, you know, case when, then, end.
It's
and
almost like reading the English language.
Yeah,
it's
always like this kind of terse, unpoetic poetry. But
mm-hmm.
Again, that goes to my whole thing about why I just love Ruby so much.
Cool. Well, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks
happy to be
the
here.
Time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. It was fun.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I thought that interview went really well, and I thought, you know, Casey actually interviewed really well. You know, he had a lot of interesting stuff to say.
I agree. He was like a perfect interviewer. It's just, you know, I was listening to him again afterwards, and it was just pleasant to listen. We should probably interview him more often.
Yeah, we'll try to get him on the show from Seattle.
Right.
He'll have to give us the update.
That's true.
Yeah, so he had some interesting things to say about Ruby and Rails, and you know, he had this interesting idea for a developer conference in the Ithaca area, which I think would be awesome.
We sort of talked about it before.
But yeah, so you know, if anybody out there, if you're a developer, if you're interested in giving a a presentation or coming to a developers conference or just helping organize or anything like that, definitely get in contact with us at podcast@incandescentsoftware.com. It's something that I would love to see.
Everybody is telling us that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because we don't really have any experience yet, but I would love to learn more.
Ignorance is bliss.
I guess it is.
Well, thanks to Casey for spending time with us. And if you know anybody who you'd like to have us interview, or if you want to be interviewed yourself, please get in touch.
And it doesn't have to be necessary about technical stuff. We are open to other topics, I guess.
Sure.
Interesting topics.
Yep.
Interesting people. There are a lot of people, interesting people around Ithaca. So yeah, if there are anybody who wants to talk to us, we are open to listen.
Cool. So, see you next time.
This has been the Ithaca Tech Podcast, theme music provided by Brad Sucks under the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Sharealike license. For show notes and more information, check our blog at blog.incandescentsoftware.com.
We should probably mention that we did get better equipment, right, Aaron? So,
okay, let's... let's start over. Let's do that.
Okay.
Just one second. This keeps on putting my freaking volume up to the max again. I don't know why it keeps doing that. Test. Okay.
Is it good?
Yeah, hopefully. The problem is it keeps sliding it up automatically. Why the hell is it doing this? Like, as I talk, the slider moves up.
Oh, interesting.
And so I keep having to, like, bring it down.
That's stressful. You shouldn't, worry about it when you talk.
I'll just leave it. It keeps bringing it up to 100. What a pain in the ass. Okay. Well, whatever. Let's just go with it.